Welcome back, everybody. We are here with another quickie episode of Legally Dirty Blonde, and we're going to be talking about another important abortion case that came after the Roe decision from the Supreme Court. And I know this topic for some is probably kind of boring because it's a lot of constitutional analysis and legal talk, but it's an important one. So if you're still with me, that's awesome. If you're not, that's okay too, but come back later and, you know, take a listen because I think you'll want to be informed on the topic come this summer when the actual current Supreme Court decides another important abortion case. But for today, we're going to talk about the case of Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And honestly, this case in some ways is arguably more important than Roe. And I think people will be surprised to learn that they weren't aware of it. So Planned Parenthood versus Casey actually partially overturned significant parts of the Roe opinion. And from what I've heard and what I've talked to people about, I've realized that a lot of people are unaware that we already have a case from the Supreme Court that does overturn Roe, at least in part. So if you didn't know that, now you do. And if you stick around, you're going to learn why. About Planned Parenthood versus Casey. This was a case decided by the Supreme Court in 1992 and was basically a challenge to five provisions of the Pennsylvania Abortion Control Act, claiming that those provisions were unconstitutional under the holding of Roe versus Wade. Really briefly, those five provisions were informed consent, spousal notification, parental consent for minors, reporting requirements for abortion providers, and the definition of a medical emergency. So this was a plurality opinion, and before I go any further, because I don't think I ever said this, there are 9 Supreme Court justices, so there you go, the more you know. And a plurality opinion means they couldn't get more than 3 justices on board, they couldn't get a majority of the justices on board, and when that happens, it's the plurality opinion that controls. In this situation, the 3 justices who authored the controlling opinion in Casey were Justice O'Connor, Justice Kennedy, and Justice Souter. So the remaining 6 seated justices at this time, just for fact's sake, were Chief Justice Rehnquist, Justice White, Justice Blackmun, who, as we know, authored the opinion in Roe, Justice Stevens, Justice Scalia, and Justice Thomas. And I want to point out something that I think is important, and that's that the 3 justices who authored this opinion, O'Connor, Kennedy, and Souter, were all extremely conservative justices who were appointed by conservative presidents. And the 3 of them refused to overturn the essential holding of Roe versus Wade. And I just think that's really fucking important right now, especially given that we have a conservative-leaning court before us currently. And in this opinion, they discuss the critical importance of the concept of stare decisis, which basically means following precedent when dealing with similar issues in cases before them. And they point out a number of reasons why this is so important, which we are going to get into. But I think that this just goes to show that these justices, at least the ones who authored the Casey opinion, respect the institution that is the Supreme Court. They know that if you were constantly reversing their own court's prior opinions, that the court would literally not matter. Nobody would take them seriously. Nobody would take the opinion seriously. And it would have a really serious impact on our country's fundamental foundations. Specifically, that the court is not a political institution and they aren't going to be swayed by political and social pressures. So, like I said, these justices refused to overturn the core holdings in Roe, which, as we learned, included a woman's fundamental right to pre-viability abortions, also that the state can restrict or prohibit abortions post-viability, and that the state has a legitimate interest in protecting the health of the mother and the life of the unborn fetus. So also, the court in Casey reasserted that the fundamental right to abortion is grounded in the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, which just further confirms the essential holding in Roe. So before we get into the parts of Casey that overturned Roe, we have to talk about that concept of stare decisis. The Casey opinion devotes a super substantial amount of time discussing this, honestly more time than they do the overturning part, and how the stare decisis analysis should be set at an even higher threshold than usual when dealing with a watershed decision such as Roe. So to be clear, stare decisis is applied when the court is considering overturning court precedent. And the justices here discuss at length their reasons in support of not overturning Roe. So we're going to go through a couple of those reasons. One was that the legal standard in Roe has not been proven to be unworkable. And they say, yeah, there may be opposition to the Roe decision, but opposition is not a valid reason to overturn a legal standard that's been clearly workable and people have been able to follow. So just because people don't agree doesn't mean it should be overturned. Another topic they discussed was reliance, and the opinion discusses the inequity that would take hold if Roe was overturned because it would give states unlimited power on the issue of abortion. They point out that now for decades, people have relied on Roe to shape their personal lives and make important life choices. And super importantly, they discuss the ability for women to participate equally in the economic and social life of the nation has been facilitated by women's ability to control their reproductive lives. So basically what the court is saying here is to overturn this would probably pretty much set women back again in our society. So that's important. They also talk about how the underlying facts of this case haven't changed. Just because medical advancements have happened, that doesn't change the fact that competing interests still exist here, meaning a woman's right to choose and the state's interest. It doesn't change the fact that, you know, viability marks the earliest point at which a state can fully ban abortion. So these are just important things to point out. And the court also importantly discussed and compared a few other landmark overrulings. One that I think probably everybody knows about is Plessy versus Ferguson, which was overturned by Brown versus Board of Education. And in case you don't know, Brown overturned Plessy and held that racial segregation, even when it is separate but equal, is unconstitutional. So basically, Plessy versus Ferguson had initially been like, yeah, that's totally cool. So basically, the point they're making with this comparison is to say that, yeah, duh, it made sense to overturn Plessy because it was a fucked up ruling. And during the time between Plessy and its overturning by Brown, there was a fundamental change to the understanding of the facts and justifications that rendered Plessy's fucked up holding. You know, basically that our country came to realize how screwed up separate but equal was, and that the overruling was the court's response to this changed understanding and these changed circumstances in our country. And they say, listen, that's not the case here with Roe. There are no changed circumstances since Roe. There's no changes to the factual understanding of Roe's central holding, and it's just not comparable to the overturning of Plessy versus Ferguson by Brown. So overall, the opinion says that overruling Roe's central holding would be unjustifiable under the standard of stare decisis principles and would seriously weaken the court's capacity to exercise the judicial power and to function as the Supreme Court of a nation dedicated to the rule of law. So the opinion really, really emphasizes all of this, and it says that a decision to overrule Roe's essential holding under the current circumstances would be profound and would cause unnecessary damage to the court's legitimacy and to the nation's commitment to the rule of law. So, as you can see, this was a super important analysis that they made. So, the court in Casey categorized Roe as a unique watershed decision, and it's saying that a case of this magnitude requires an even higher standard of stare decisis analysis than would be applied to, you know, your average case, I'm going to say. So, I know I said that we were going to talk about the fact that Casey did overturn Roe in part, so let's get into that. So first, we're going to talk about the rejection of the trimester framework from Roe. And just to quickly review, if you forgot, the trimester framework in Roe said that in the first trimester, a state could not regulate abortions whatsoever. The second trimester, they could regulate for medical reasons relating to the mother's health. And in the third trimester, a state was allowed to completely prohibit abortion to protect potential life. And they set a viability line at about 28 weeks in Roe. And by ditching the trimester framework in Casey, the court also said, due to medical advancements, it's been shown that a fetus can live autonomously or reaches fetal viability at 24 weeks now, as opposed to 28 weeks. So that was one area where a line was redrawn. And, you know, it increased the state's interest in fetal viability. The Casey court said that fetal viability analysis was a more workable standard than the trimester framework. But by ditching the trimester framework for straight viability, the state could now impose abortion restrictions during the first trimester. So this was a big distinction from Roe. So basically, the court was saying that now, pre-viability, a state is allowed to show concern for fetal life. However, and now this is where the second significant change comes in, however, that concern cannot pose an undue burden on a woman's fundamental right to abortion. So this is where, like I just said, the second significant change to the Roe opinion comes in, and it deals with the analysis of state abortion regulations. So remember in Roe, we talked about how a state was required to show a compelling interest in order to regulate or restrict abortions. Casey changed that and applied a new standard, this undue burden standard, in order to decide if a state law that was regulating abortions was valid or not. And the question then became, does the state's regulation on abortion have the purpose or effect of imposing an undue burden? In other words, does the regulation have the purpose or effect of imposing a substantial obstacle in the way of a woman seeking a pre-viability abortion? So basically, the court applied this new undue burden standard to those five provisions I discussed in the beginning, or went over briefly in the beginning, from the Pennsylvania Abortion Control Act. And in applying this undue burden standard, the court found that 4 out of 5 of those provisions should be upheld as constitutional. It found only 1 out of those 5 was unconstitutional, and that was the spousal notification requirement. They basically said that not only does this give too much power of a husband over the wife, but it also would basically serve as a ban on abortion because it imposes an undue burden on the woman seeking a pre-viability abortion. So the court felt that even with these two significant changes to the holding of Roe, meaning ditching the trimester framework for straight viability and applying this new undue burden standard to state regulations, the essential holding of Roe that recognized both the woman's constitutionally protected liberty as well as the state's interest in protecting fetal life were still being appropriately balanced. So, yeah, guys, that's pretty much a summary of Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which is a really important abortion case in the United States. And I feel like hopefully some of you learned something new today. And I just think it's really important because it kind of really fucked with the holding of Roe. You know, okay, overall, yeah, the essential holding of Roe that a woman still has a right to a pre-viability abortion is there, but now viability is 4 weeks sooner. like we said, from 28 weeks in Roe to 24 weeks here. And now the state can impose pre-viability regulations on abortions, even though they do have to pass that undue burden standard. You know, it still allows and gives permission to do something that was not allowed under the Roe decision. So I just think it's important to point those things out because I don't think a lot of people knew about this. So also, again, I just think that there's something to be said about the expansive stare decisis discussion here and the emphasis the court placed on their logical reasoning, why the fundamental right of a woman cannot and should not be overruled. And I think that all of the stuff that they discussed in their stare decisis analysis in Casey is still applicable today. And I think and I hope that the current court will see that, but, you know, we'll have to see. And we'll get into that discussion a little bit more next episode. But just remember, this stare decisis analysis in Casey is probably going to be the most important part of that discussion when it comes to whether what's going to happen with the case this summer. So, like I said, next episode, we're going to get into the current case, and we're going to talk about the Dobbs case, which is about the Mississippi 15-week pre-viability abortion ban. And, you know, I'll probably get into some of my own opinions on that, but we'll see what happens. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. But regardless, don't forget to like and subscribe. I've literally forgotten to say that every single time I do these. So like and subscribe. Write me a review. Even if it's bad, I'll take the criticism, but hopefully it'll be good. Don't forget, follow the pod on the gram at Legally Dirty Blonde Pod and on Twitter at LD Blonde Pod. And until next time, remember, legally, dirty blondes have more fun.